John, so Ellen, a question
yes.
that I did not ask myself until I read one of your books, the book Soul Keeping. This question messed me up. Over the years, I've asked myself, how do I lead better? How do I build a volunteer team? How do I cast vision effectively? How can I be a great communicator? How do I manage my budget? I mean, like, just there's a lot of practical questions that I ask myself that help me develop and grow as a leader. It's all great. But this one question I never asked myself, which was, how's my soul doing?
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, I wish I had a better explanation, but I just did not know that I needed to ask myself that question. I knew enough about EQI to emotional intelligence to kind of understand where are my areas of strength, where are my areas of opportunities. But just that question about the soul and understanding how important the soul is in the life of a person, not just a leader, it really forced me to think and pause and stop.
Yep.
You wrote the book on it. You wrote the book on soul keeping. Why did that topic come up for you? And just talk a little bit about the soul.
Well, in the first place, I think it's very common for people who are in leadership positions, and I'm talking about leadership now, not in the very broad, we're all made in God's image, we're all to exercise dominion, we're all leaders in that sense. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about it now more in the narrow sense of an organizational leader or a group leader or the spiritual gift of leadership. Mm-hmm. And those folks will tend to be people who tend to be activists. Mm-hmm. So they will recreationally tend to think more about what needs to be done out there.
What can I fix?
As opposed to being a contemplative and want to reflect. And they will be eager. They'll have a bias towards action. They'll want to change things. They'll want to be making a difference. So it will be very common for somebody with that kind of wiring and those kind of gifts who's then in that position to be much more outwardly focused rather than attending to the soul. Mm-hmm. So not surprising.
Sure.
Don't beat yourself up. Jesus still loves
There's
you.
There's hope.
Yep. As Dallas Willard would often say, the main thing you get out of life and the main thing that God gets out of your life is the person that you become. And one of the temptations for folks who are leaders in that way is to neglect attending to themselves.
Yep.
The main thing God gets out of your life is the person you become. As a leader, the main gift that you offer to the people that you lead is the person that you are. Mm-hmm. And we're constantly tempted to lose sight of that. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, when you're in a leadership role, people are constantly looking at you and reading you in ways that people who are leaders often forget.
Yeah.
And there's no way to bring health to the group I'm leading if I'm not living a healthy life myself. Mm-hmm. I just cannot plow around the well-being of my soul by attempting to bring good technique or method to a situation. So, folks will talk a lot in our day about the soul of a leadership. Mm-hmm. Very often people will write about that, but they never actually talk about what exactly does soul mean.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important topic. So we'll take a moment now that we're here to talk about that notion of soul. I actually think there's a corollary to soul with an organization that's a helpful thing to think about. Dallas Willard was the most helpful person for me. He would talk about the parts of a person. Mm-hmm. You have a will, you can choose. That's central to leadership. Mm-hmm. You have a mind, you can think and you can feel. You have a body so that there's a little place for your kingdom to begin. And then he would say the soul is what ties all of that together. And took me a long time to understand that. I always thought of the soul as this wispy, immaterial little thing that lives on after your body dies. He explained, no, in the ancient world, thinkers would look at a tree, these amazing trees outside of us, and they have branches and leaves and roots, and they bear fruit, and they can reproduce and photosynthesize, lots of different functions, but they are one being, one entity. And it was the ability to integrate different functions into one life that ancient thinkers would call soul. And so actually, Christian thinkers like Aquinas or Augustine would talk about the vegetative soul. And they didn't mean that trees are persons that will live forever. They just meant that they have this ability to integrate. And that animals have that. And then human beings, that was the rational soul. So that soul is that part of you that integrates your will and your thoughts and your feelings and your body into one whole person. The soul longs for integration. Mm-hmm. The soul longs for harmony. Mm-hmm. And our problem is sin has gotten into us at the level of soul, and sin always disintegrates. Mm-hmm. And when sin gets into a leader, that's bad, because mm-hmm. Dallas used to say, one of the things we love about little children is they haven't learned to manage their face. Mm-hmm. So you look at a little child, and what's on their face is what's in their heart and in their mind.
Immediately.
But when we quote unquote grow up, we learn how to use our faces to hide our real intent. Yeah. So I smile at you and make you think I like you when I'm really going to try to hurt you.
Yeah.
And that's why leaders who are disintegrated, where they are driven by conflicting desires. Mm-hmm. I want to be a leader, but I want my ego to be on the throne. Mm-hmm. And particularly in the church, I want to preach about Jesus, but then I find myself jealous of somebody else because they're more effective at preaching about how Jesus died to himself than I am at preaching about how Jesus died to myself. And so we start to discover when we're in a leadership position, how much duplicity is in me. You know, Kierkegaard said, purity of heart is to will one thing. Mm. And that is where I really want the kingdom of God. I want good for people. Mm. I want that good for me. But when sin gets into us, then there's multiplicity and duplicity, double-mindedness, James talks about. Yeah. And when that's present in a leader, it infects everybody. Mm-hmm. And the group will pick that up much more quickly than the leader will pick that up. So that question of, how is it with my soul? Mm-hmm. One of the statements Jesus makes is, what is it worth to a person if they gain the whole world but lose their soul?
Yeah.
And I used to think what he meant by that was, doesn't do any good to have a lot of money, a lot of power, a lot of sex if you're going to go to hell.
Yeah.
And of course, that's true, it doesn't, but that's not what he was saying. What he was saying is, if you, a lost soul is a soul where I have conflicting desires and I want everybody to like me, but I want to get what I want.
Yeah.
And I want to be thought to be generous, but I want to fulfill all my desires to be wealthy and have real nice things. And so I'm at conflict with my own self, and then I use my body to hide my true desires from you. Once somebody is in that condition, it is impossible for them to experience soul satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So that lostness of soul is a clinically accurate diagnosis that Jesus makes.
Lostness of soul.
And when that's present in a leader, it will be devastating, not just for the leader, but for the entire organization. Yeah. And people will feel it. Yeah. They may not be able to name it, but when you have a leader with a lost soul, mm-hmm. even though they might be quite charismatic and quite gifted and able to get their way a lot, they sow the seeds of destruction that will impact everybody. So for anybody who's in a position of leadership, to always be asking the question, how is it with my soul? Yeah. Is my soul well? The soul is very deep, and that's part of why in ancient literature generally and in the scriptures, very often people will address their soul as if it was a separate person. Why are you downcast, oh my soul?
Well, you've even talked about how it can't be measured. Like, you can measure the stars, you can measure the sun, you can measure the earth, you can measure all of that, but a soul cannot be measured.
Yeah, a soul is larger than the universe because that's the nature of spirit. We tend not to remember that spiritual, the spiritual realm is real. Mm-hmm. And it is real. And that's part of where, when we're dealing with people, we're dealing with their souls, which are vast. And so as a leader, one of the hardest things about being a leader is it's very difficult to lead people without violating their kingdom, without violating their wills. Mm-hmm. And so to honor people's soul as I lead them is really important. But that's part of where I have to become aware of, and this is what you were talking about, how is it with my soul? And what that means is looking at the different parts. What do I really want? Mm-hmm. And I have to begin by being honest with that. I was talking with a group of pastors yesterday about envy. Mm-hmm. And I'm very familiar with that sense of, oh my gosh, look at you. You are the online campus pastor for this place with just tens of thousands of people, and I wish I was that successful. And I can't flip a switch and turn that off. But what I can do is be aware of it and bring it to God and say, God, would you help to deliver me from this and teach me what it is that you want to teach me, and let other people, you know what? This is part of what I struggle with. This is just who I am. Because it's when the soul is unrecognized and when it's disintegrated, but unknown, that the potential for damage is highest.
You mentioned teams. I want to go there. But before that, I've heard you also say it's possible to not have an outer solution, but still have inner meaning.
Yeah.
We talked about the crisis that exists, or the world we're living in right now is so complex. Yeah. And things don't go as planned. Things crack and fall apart, and team members leave, and the organization doesn't go the direction you thought it would be. And when our outer world begins to shake, if our inner world is not strong, that's when we're trying, because we're trying to figure out what's my solution. I think COVID accelerated that in terms of when buildings were shut down, I think as pastors, many were forced to face the question, do people still need me? And I think that's a soul that's kind of, is that, would you say that feels like a question that's more related to the soul than, man, how fast is my church growing, or whatever those outer world questions are? Talk a little bit about what you've seen and pastors you've talked to, where when the outer world crashes, the difference between having a healthy inner world versus ignoring
what,
that soul.
What happened for me was I hit a point in life where life, work, it impacted my family, fell apart in ways that I could never have imagined, and that we don't need to go into the details about, but that were deeply personal and could not, cannot be fixed.
Yeah.
And I had not yet in my life faced something where a situation was horribly, painfully broken and could not be fixed. Mm-hmm. And so one of the passages in scripture that was very helpful to me was 2 Corinthians chapter 4, where Paul says, therefore we do not lose heart. Mm-hmm. And for anybody listening to this conversation, if you are a leader, if you're in a position to lead other people, one of the things that you cannot outsource is the condition of your heart to not lose heart. A leader who has lost heart is a tragic thing. And I would just...
And we talk about, as a leader, to increase our capacity, we talk about outsourcing, we talk about developing leaders, we talk about empowering people, but this is the one we cannot...
You can't delegate that.
You can't delegate
this. You can't delegate the condition of your heart.
You can't.
And the condition of my heart must not rest in how are my circumstances, how are our outcomes, are the charts all up? And my heart's well-being cannot rest in that. If it does, I and everybody will be on very, very shaky ground. And then fear, ego, all those things come in. So we don't lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. Yeah. For I reckon that these light and momentary afflictions, Paul is being beaten, he's imprisoned, waiting to be killed. These light and momentary afflictions are not worth comparing to the eternal weight of glory that they are working out in us. Therefore, we fix our eyes not on what is seen. Now, metrics are a good thing.
Yeah.
We need to be aware of them. But that's not where our attention is most deeply fixed. Not on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary. What is unseen is eternal. Mm-hmm. So I would sometimes, in the days when it was most painful, just write down, make a list. What are the ways in which I'm wasting away? Mm-hmm. My work, my job, my reputation, family, finances, aging, all of those things I'm wasting away. And then how can I be inwardly renewed day by day? Mm-hmm. And I can love my wife. I can love and care for this child. I can love my church, which is in a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. I can practice courage right now. I've always admired people that have courage, never thought of myself as a real courageous person, but I can really work on that right now. I can prepare to die. My last breath's a lot closer now than my first breath, and I can begin to get ready for that. And in a way, for anybody who's listening to us, the more precarious your outer world is, the deeper the possibilities to find incredible meaning in inner renewal. And there is nothing in your outer world that can threaten the renewal of that inner world. And actually, we need desperately people who will lead from the inside out. And whose inner world is constantly being renewed. My temptation, and I think for a lot of leaders, the temptation is to reverse that and think, if my outer world is going great, then my inner world is allowed to be joyful and at peace. But if my outer world is going bad, if I look inadequate or like a failure, then my inner world crumbles. And part of what we see with Jesus, and this is part of where we learn from him, is, for example, when the time came where he needed to teach very difficult things, which would mean lots of people would leave, he taught very difficult things and lots of people quit following him. And he was very untroubled by that. Now, his disciples were troubled by it because it's like, no, we need to have bigger and bigger crowds, so we feel really good. He was very, very clear on that. He lived with a deep sense of the reality of God's kingdom, and God's kingdom did not depend on how Jesus's crowds looked.
So, okay. So the idea of approval addiction, I heard you say we were not, and I'm butchering this quote, so fix it. But we were not created to,
bear the burden of our outcomes.
How do you do that when you're in a leadership role where you are responsible for the outcomes? There's a board that you're held accountable to. There's a team that's looking up to you. There's, you know, families that depend on how well the church is. It's a reality. We can't live in like la la land thinking, oh, you know, everything's, I know, and I'm speaking for myself. I've been tempted to think more practically and just, but there's stuff I need to get done. And I'm responsible for that. How do you live that life?
So we're talking now about the narrow way. Jesus would talk about the narrow way, and that's not doctrinal, you know, correctness or legalism. It's just, it's easy to fall off on either side of many, many issues. And this is one of them. Part of what we're deeply interested here is to bring together a passionate concern for the spiritual formation of the souls of folks that has wisdom and substance and a deep valuing of leadership. As a craft and a discipline that needs to be done really, really well. And so when it comes to outcomes, there are two potential problems. Sometimes people can be in a church. You see this sometimes in folks that think of themselves as really devoted to spiritual formation, where they say, I don't want to idolize numbers. We're not about that. And so they stop to look at effectiveness. And often that's done out of a fear of confronting people or confronting reality. So they have people in a church that are teaching, that don't have the gift of teaching, shouldn't be teaching, that are leading, that don't have the gift of leadership and shouldn't be leading, people in the wrong slots, people that are not gifted, and out of terminal niceness and avoidance, they don't confront any of that. And the church becomes increasingly ineffective, and they spiritualize over that. That's not good. So to be deeply open to reality. Max Dupree, who is a very important mentor for me and Nancy, used to say, the first task of a leader is define reality. And so outcomes, effectiveness is very central to that. The other side of it is not simply to be aware of outcomes, but to live for them and idolize them. And I'll sometimes think about it's like with a missile or a rocket ship, feedback, outcomes are real good for guidance. We're on track. Nope, we need to shift something. It's very bad for fuel. And then if I start using outcomes as fuel, I'm living for this.
And
if people are giving me this, then I've got energy and I'm great. But become I become increasingly addicted for it. I need it more and more. One of the reasons why solitude is such an important spiritual practice for leadership is when I go into solitude and I'm there for a period of time, I remember I am not my performance. I am not my outcomes. Jesus loves me no matter how things are going, and therefore my well-being does not have to be attached to the extent to which people approve of me.
Yeah.
And this again is where Jesus needs to be our leader in leadership. Who in Jesus's life did he not disappoint?
Yeah.
He disappointed the crowds. He disappointed the Pharisees and the religious leaders. He disappointed the Romans. He disappointed his own disciples. He disappointed his own family. His mom and siblings came to pick him up because they thought he was crazy.
Yeah.
He disappointed the crowds that were shouting. He disappointed everybody except his father. Hmm. And he was okay with that. And if, particularly for folks who are leading them, my own favorite definition of leadership is Ron Heifetz from Harvard. He said that leadership is disappointing people at a rate they can stand. And that's true, because if you're leading...
We like quoting it, but we're not sure...
We don't like doing it.
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
If you're leading people, by definition, you're trying to take them to a place where part of them wants to go or they wouldn't be following, but another part of them doesn't want to go or they'd already be there.
Yeah.
You cannot lead people effectively if you're not willing to disappoint them, if you need their approval. And so Dallas Willard would often talk about this. There's that old myth of Atlas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was the titan that had the world on his shoulders. You are not meant to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you can simply release it. You are not meant to bear the burden of outcomes. And I think what probably destroys leaders' souls, and I'm not using metaphorical language now, I'm talking literally about your soul. What destroys it is we bear the burden of outcomes. If you look at kings of Israel in the Old Testament, we'll probably talk about that a bit more. When they got in trouble, it's because they tried to carry the weight of outcomes.
Yeah.
And then they would try to do too much. And their egos would get all mixed up in how things were turning out. And then that would destroy them.
A verse that I often wrestle with was Jesus said, you know, carry my burden, my yoke, because it's light.
Mm-hmm.
And leadership has often not felt light.
Yeah.
Where are we getting this wrong? Is it that? Are we carrying something that's not meant to be ours to carry? And how do I release that?
Yeah.
And going back to the team question, how do I help my team to release it too? Because am I creating a healthy culture within our team where we're asking, all of us are asking that question? So how do we do that?
A great question for leaders to ask is, what happens to my inner world when my outer world doesn't look rosy?
Yeah.
And often for leaders, what happens in those moments are either I become threatened and anxious and unhappy and feel inadequate and collapse, or I go into control mode and I want to try to pretend like everything is good, and I get angry at you because you're on my team and you're not making things happen. And so there's this pervasive sense of anger or fear in an organization. But where it really begins, again, is with a leader who is not experiencing inner renewal that is independent of how things are going. Now, it's always the case that if I'm leading something, I will carry a burden for it, kind of like a parent does for a child. So there will be ways in which I will be aware of, nope, things aren't on the right track here. That's of concern to me. But that's different than having my ego on the line. And we all smell it in folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to say my self-worth is coming from God. And again, ironically, I would say for everybody listening to us who's assessing the well-being of their souls, the more things get painful in your outer world, the greater opportunity it is to discover the reality of the condition of my soul. And there is a wonderful chance to learn about the possibility of freedom when my outer world is becoming chaotic. And I think that's precisely why Paul wrote part of what he did. Mm-hmm. Though outwardly we are wasting away. And his description of his own concerns, we are pressed down but not destroyed, perplexed but not in despair. I think it's so interesting to think of Paul as being perplexed.
Mm-hmm.
So many people think about Paul as just, you know, always certain about everything. Paul says he was perplexed. So if there's leaders out there who are perplexed right now,
you're in good company.
Yep. Join the club.
Yep.
And yet in the midst of that, inwardly being renewed day by day.
So the question I think that we've got to ask ourselves is, how do I assess the well-being of my soul? How is my soul doing? And I love how you said Jesus is our leader in leadership. And he taught us that it's more important to follow. And it's just another reminder, good leaders lead and great leaders follow.
Thanks for listening to Rediscover Leadership, a series from Become New for Leaders. If you're here, you're asking great questions about what it means to lead while you follow Jesus. In case you didn't know, what you just heard is one of a 7-part series. Be sure to catch the rest. You can subscribe to receive all 7 from becomenew.com/leaders. You can also use the same link to get our free ebook on leadership and spiritual formation. Finally, if you want daily spiritual formation content from John Ortberg, founder of Become New, you can subscribe at becomenew.com/subscribe. We're so glad you're here, and we're committed with you to becoming leaders who follow well and lead like Jesus did.